Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting. Faith Radio Mornings, this is hour two of our Best Of programming for the 28th of December. We've been looking back throughout some of the interviews in 2018 that we did here on Faith Radio Mornings, trying to bring some of the important news topics to bear, some of the special interest topics to light that are important to us as people, whether we're parents or grandparents, single people, young people, as we're walking out our faith in this world following Jesus each day. And looking back, it's been really interesting for us to see all of the people that came into the program from time to time. And I will say this, I'm sometimes starstruck even by some of the guests that we get. And Ronald Johnson, Captain Ronald Johnson, filled that category for me as somebody who was in our national headlines pretty substantially on an ongoing basis for his role in the Ferguson riots a couple of years ago. And we remember the young African-American man that was shot by police as he was walking away from them and lay in the street for quite some time. It was a very troubling set of circumstances that led to a lot of tension and a lot of unrest in our country. Certainly was on the national news for quite an extended period of time, and really it brought forth a lot of the conversations that were happening with Black Lives Matter at the time. There was a lot of anger, understandably so, relative to social justice and reconciliation in our country. And Rachel Sutton, I know I'm with young people often, and certainly dimensions of social justice and reconciliation is really one of the top of the mind issues, along with things like climate change and other of these possibilities that really matter moving forward to people that are of your age and category.
Mm-hmm. And we really need to learn how to talk about it. I think that's something that we may be missing, really, is just we get so feisty with posting on Facebook and fighting on Facebook, which just never is a good idea.
Yeah.
It never helps anyone. And so really, it comes down to that conversation piece of how do we talk about this lovingly and kindly and hear each other out, especially when our circumstances and our experiences don't line up with the person we're talking with.
Absolutely. And I think being at the ground level with people in an actual relationship is what really matters here, because if we just spend all of our time on virtual media sites trolling one another or talking back and forth, we don't really understand the kind of experience that other people are having. And that was part of this conversation with Captain Johnson, was what was it like to be in Ferguson? What was it like to be an African-American living where there wasn't a lot of a sense of hope and there is ongoing senses of injustice with the police department? And I know this is a very complex subject, so we're not taking one side or the other than to recognize it was a very unjust situation in the perception of many. And so it led to a lot of tension, a lot of riots. And so a very important conversation here next on Faith Radio Mornings, looking back at the interview with Captain Ronald Johnson. It's 19 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined on the line by Captain Ronald Johnson, Ferguson, Missouri. And Captain Johnson, you released a book here, a memoir titled 13 Days in Ferguson. It was just such an incredible read. I couldn't put it down. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
So take us back to that time, a little over 4 years ago now, in August of 2014, in which some of the events in Ferguson began to unfold. Remind our listeners what precipitated these 13 days. What were some of the events that we saw that were so tragic in the streets?
One of the police incidents between an Officer Wilson and a young man, Michael Brown Jr., which caused protests in our community and, quite frankly, in our nation.
And for you, it sort of unfolded slowly. You saw you're participating in it in those early days, but it was sort of the slow boil. It wasn't an immediate explosion of what began to take shape. Kind of talk us through what it was in those first day or two as the events began to unfold.
Well, you know, in those first day or two, protesters and rioters began to take the streets of Ferguson, Missouri. Became to be looting. Buildings were burned. And as the days went on, the crowds began to grow and grow and just get larger and larger, which caused a large police response. And it really pitted a community against law enforcement in a way that I think our country had not seen since probably the 1960s.
And for you, early on, you were participating, but you weren't front and center with it. But you did begin to have some interactions, some with some of your colleagues on the force, maybe colleagues that were of different skin color. And it began to surface even some divides for you in the midst of what had been longtime friendships.
Yes, and I think that a lot of emotions were centered around that time. And we start seeing people express their differences and their feelings in ways that we had not had discussions, what friends hadn't had discussions before. And we began to see each other in a different light. And in some cases, for me, talk about walking the middle of the road, trying to balance both sides. And both sides wanted you to take a side. And so it became a very challenging time for me personally, I think for everyone involved in a personal sense.
Well, it's an incredibly compelling book. I couldn't put it down. It's titled 13 Days in Ferguson. To our listeners out there, I highly recommend picking it up. Captain Johnson, you do just an amazing job of taking us into the ground level of how tense the interchanges might be and what we can learn from that. And so early on, again, in the process, you were there, but you weren't necessarily in charge of the situation. What began to happen? I know you were listening to some announcements, and the governor came on, and you found out then that you were going to take a more significant role in the ongoing protests.
Well, I think in our country, there was everybody kind of wanted a different response and kind of thought that the response was too heavy-handed for the start, and they had too much of a military look. And so there was a lot of pressure from around the country to do something different. 5 days in, the governor decided that he was going to make some changes, and I had no idea that I would be the one that would be put in charge. And I went to a meeting, and that's where I found out. I found out right there in front of everyone else. And so it did become a challenge to find out and not have time to think through an act plan how to confront the situation.
Well, and I love when you called your wife about this, and her question, her first response was, why? And it sort of took you back, as you describe it in the book, but you began to reflect on it, and that question of why became a very significant question for you in this process.
It did, and people always ask me to this day, why do I think I was chosen? And my response is, it doesn't really matter to me why I was chosen. I'm honored and humbled that I was chosen.
Well, and I think for you,
to take this walk.
Yeah, and I'd love to just get into some of the decisions that you ended up making that really began to have a positive impact. But even in thinking through why and how you would lead moving forward, your father played a very significant role in your understanding of life, of faith, of how to walk these things out. So talk about the role your father had in your own life.
Well, you know, my father, when he was in his early 30s, was in a tragic car accident, which paralyzed him partially on one side of his body. But growing up, I always saw him walk with his strength. The walk that he had, he walked with it, and he just kept walking. He just kept walking through life the best that he could. And I think just that empowering time in my life, that was my motivation. And I said, well, you know, what is going to be your plan? And I decided just to walk down the streets of Ferguson and see the people that were there and see their faces and hear their voices. And walk and understand and just walk in faith and knowing that everything would be okay.
When you talk about, too, that at that time there was this, it was one of the first moments of a really significant divide between people and the police, maybe since the 1960s. And at that time, the police force was showing up in riot gear for, again, understandable reasons, but it just led to this perception of the divide between. And so you made this decision, and talk our listeners through this, to do away with the riot gear and really walk among the people, you and the rest of many in the police force, and what that was to take off the gear and just become part of the people. Talk us through that.
You know, for me, it was a moment of not showing those titles and those uniforms we wear, but showing ourselves of being men and women and fathers and mothers and uncles and all those things we are before we put on any title that we have. And, you know, for me, you know, I talk in a book about not wearing my police vest. And everybody said, why didn't you wear it? And even my wife, of course, it was a challenging time. But I wanted the people on the street to know that I am you. I'm a part of you, and I don't need protection from you. And because my faith was protecting me. My God was protecting me. And for me at that moment, that's all that I needed.
Well, you have a powerful story then of a woman who came out of the crowd and just embraced you at that time. Speak about what kind of was going through your mind at that point. And you ended up running into her then several months later as well.
Yes, you know, I'm walking down the street not knowing what the reaction was going to be for me the first time that I decided to walk down the street and how people are going to react toward that. And I'm walking down the street and this lady comes out of the crowd and gives me this big hug and says, "Thank you for seeing my face." And at that moment, I knew that I just needed to walk, and that was my plan, and that was a plan that God was giving me. And I about 4 or 5 months later, I was out in the community, and I saw her. She walked up and said, "Do you remember me?" And I said, "No." And she said, "I was a lady that came out and hugged you." And she said, "My name was Angel." And what a name, and what a that at that moment, that the first person that would hug me and give me that strength to continue to walk was a lady by the name of Angel.
I get chills here in the story. The book is 13 Days in Ferguson. It's a memoir from Captain Ronald Johnson. And we're going to take a short break. And Captain Johnson, when we come back, I would love to get into this further then in terms of the importance of really seeing one another and not reducing each other down to issues or stereotypes and generalizations if we're going to have any hope of healing some of the racial divide in our country. So more to come with Captain Ronald Johnson next on Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 9 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and delighted to be joined by Captain Ronald Johnson, who has released a book, a memoir titled 13 Days in Ferguson. Captain Johnson was there and was tasked by the governor to help dissipate some of the ongoing racial tension in those events that unfolded with the shooting of Michael Brown some 4 years ago. And Captain Johnson, before the break, you were talking about seeing people, and this woman who came out of the crowd named Angel, who just referenced that you saw her. And what I would love to hear from you is just the importance of really seeing one another. It's too easy, isn't it? And then to just look at the news and say, well, this is just true of everybody in every circumstance. But if we really do engage in relationship with people across these divides, some healing and hope can happen.
Oh, I agree. And, I always talk about this sense of people are saying they're colorblind, and people are colorblind.
Yeah.
And people need not be colorblind. I think when we're colorblind, we're not seeing the value in each other. And I think by seeing each other, we see the value, and we can see the experiences of each other, and it can become this shared conversation because we share more with each other than we're different.
Well, and I think, too, that we then are subject to the idea that everybody falls into a certain kind of category. I have a text in from a listener to the show who says that they're a father-in-law of a son from St. Louis and daughter who lived there and church and people in Ferguson. There was a lot of good people there, but sometimes there's people who came to just even begin to stir up some trouble, too, and maybe then end up creating the perception that everybody is coming from a certain point of view. Did you see some of that where maybe people were just coming to stir up trouble as well while you were trying to do the work of racial reconciliation?
Yes, and that's why whenever I go around the country and talk about there were protesters and there were rioters. There were protesters there that were out there in a brave manner and trying to create change for our country, just like many of the men and women that were there in law enforcement. But there were people there that weren't there to create a positive change and were not trying to have this shared experience and were trying to create that divide. And so, yes, that was a part of the issue that we were contending with. We made it through it. You know, good always topples evil.
Well, and it takes people like you and others to just sort of have the courage to begin to break down these walls, I know. And I would be curious for your suggestions for somebody like me, Captain Johnson, who lives admittedly in a fairly white demographic in the western suburbs of Minneapolis. I have done quite a bit of work with my wife and others and married by a pastor of an urban community in inner city Chicago. But even then, I felt that I was mostly unfamiliar with how people just live day in and day out in various segments of our country. Do you have suggestions for just how to get involved and cross some of these divides relationally when we're so segmented geographically?
I always say that we try to meet people that are different than us. And I think that's something that we all need to continue to do throughout our life. But I also think when we meet someone, we talk about who we are and we let them tell us who they are. And we go back and digest that. And like I said earlier, we'll find out that we are more alike than we're different. Volunteer in different communities. And I think then we begin to see where the needs are in our country and in our community. And I think when we do that, it makes better. I think as parents, we have those conversations early on with our kids, and we introduce them to the most diverse group of people and community and ideas that we can.
And I appreciate your invitation as well to recognize that we aren't colorblind, that there really are factors that play into some of these racial conversations. And so for you, where are things in Ferguson? How do they stand right now? Is there still tension in some of the community? Because I know that as you described it, it wasn't a place where a lot of tension had historically been. Where do we stand now in Ferguson?
I think Ferguson is starting to move forward, but I always talk about it's inch by inch. There hasn't been any big steps, but it took us a while to get to this point in communities like Ferguson, the communities in our country. But people are having that conversation. People are beginning to talk. And even for us in our community in Ferguson, we're seeing the church reveal itself in a stronger way than it had before. And so I think that has been so important to this change in our country, in communities like Ferguson. And so we're seeing it inch by inch. But as long as we keep walking, and I always say that I'm on this new journey in my life, if we keep walking, we will be okay, because ahead is always that brighter moment for us.
Well, and as you've worked through some of these racial reconciliation conversations, I'm always mindful of the quote of Martin Luther King Jr., who says that darkness cannot drive out darkness, only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate, only love can do that. For hate multiplies hate, and violence multiplies violence, and toughness multiplies toughness in a descending spiral of destruction. So at some point along the way, I'm guessing somebody has to step in, similar to what you did, but you were just one person. We all need to step in that way and say, hey, we're not going to meet hate with hate. We're going to try to combat it with love.
I agree. And I think it's one by one. I think sometimes we do think, well, one person can make a difference. Mm. But if we all become that one person, look how strong we are, and we become much stronger.
Well, it really is the invitation.
So I believe in that.
Yeah, and invitation of the church to really shine that light in the world. Captain Johnson, where can we find your book? I assume it's through many of the normal, usual channels. Again, it's titled 13 Days in Ferguson. If our listeners want to pick up a copy, where's the best place to go?
All the Christian bookstores, Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, Walmart.com, and Target.com. So anywhere books are sold. And Tyndall.com,
Love it. I was really moved to tears as I read. I can't recommend it highly enough. Thanks again for taking the time to be part of Faith Radio Mornings, and just again for what you did in Ferguson so many years ago.
Well, it's been an honor, and thank you. And if anybody wants to follow me on my Facebook page, it's Lodestone, SG, LODESTONE, SG. So please follow me on Facebook. I'd love to hear from you and would respond back to you.
That's awesome. God bless, Captain Johnson. Really appreciate your time. We'll go to Breakpoint next as part of our ongoing programming for this Best Of show of Faith Radio Mornings. Up next is some news here on Faith Radio Mornings, and then we'll have a conversation with Matt Sorens, who's a regular contributor here to the program, and he's from World Relief. We're going to talk quite a bit about some of the dimensions of immigration and what we saw in 2018, as well as what we can anticipate in 2019. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 28th of December as we're doing some Best Of programming all week post-Christmas, looking back in 2018, some of the main topics that came to mind so often. And again, Rachel, immigration was one of those topics. I can't count the number of times it came up in a variety of ways with a variety of guests from a variety of perspectives. We've talked so much about building the wall on the southern border. There was Mexican caravans that people would come and talk about in the program. David Aikman, who regularly joined us on Mondays, talked about immigration crisis from the Middle East into Europe. It was just a top-of-the-mind issue where so much movement around the globe happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so close to people's hearts in a way where a lot of people feel very emotional about it, and they're very tied to it in some ways, and other people feel a lot of fear about it. And so, it's absolutely something that's important to discuss.
Yeah, and certainly there are a lot of political dimensions to it, and whether we should have policies like wall building and all of these kinds of things. But what I appreciated about this show is that we regularly had guests like Matt Sorens, who's up next from World Relief, thinking about the impact that immigration and people coming into our country that are not used to being in the United States, maybe have never visited here, the role that the church can actually play into this. And I know for me, growing up in my generation, there was not so much global mobility happening. And so we didn't really have to think much about taking care of, quote, the stranger, the alien, to use some of the biblical text words. And it's really one of those new generation top of the mind things is, what does it mean to show hospitality to those in need? It's going to be, this is not going to end anytime soon.
Yeah. Yeah. It really, so much truth in what you just said, where they're all coming here to us. And there's these people who are, you know, not in their comfort zone anymore. And so how do we take care of these people, and how do we offer our own home, our own hospitality in a practical way, but also in a logical way, in a sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of factors there.
Yeah, there really is. And I think, you know, when you look back throughout history, and it's part of what I appreciate about church history, is that the church is always faced with new dimensions that maybe were not there the generation before. And you can look back for the last 2,000 years that the church has had to change and to adjust, staying true to its message, staying true to the mission of the kingdom and the gospel, the good news. But there's always new social circumstances that need to be addressed. And so Matt Sorens was a great guest to have on, again, from World Relief. We're going to listen into an interview that we did in which we can think about what it means to take care of people in need.
As you're flipping the calendar, it's the perfect time to think through your goals and desires for your family. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. What do you want to change in your family in the coming year? Do you need to rearrange your schedule in order to have weekly one-on-one time with your teen? Or maybe it's time to get some outside help for your family. Take a moment today to think through the tangible, positive steps that you can take in the coming year. Then sit down with your kids and ask them what changes they'd like to make in the family dynamic. You might be surprised by their response. Here's your chance. Be intentional. Get a fresh start.
Parenting teens isn't for the faint of heart, which is why moms and dads turn to parenting expert Mark Gregston for help. Learn about Mark's upcoming events and check out his latest resources online at ParentingTodaysTeens.org. That's ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner. And as we wrap up our week here for Faith Radio Mornings and thinking ahead to next week, we're going to do a lot of year-end review and looking ahead into 2019 as well. And we thought we could wrap up this week by starting that process and inviting Matt Sorens to join us, who's been a regular contributor to Faith Radio Mornings, and he is the U.S. Director of Church Mobilization for World Relief. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning. It's good to be back with you.
Yeah, I love having you on the program. And you and I in this past year have chatted quite often about immigration and the church's response to that. And you not only do this for World Relief, but you're also co-author of the book Welcoming the Stranger, and kind of looking at some biblical ways to think about immigration and when somebody's maybe not the resident of the same country as we might be. So give us a little sense of what's in the book, Matt.
Sure. Well, you know, I think because immigration is such a headline issue, and this past year that's been even more true than in years past, I think, it's easy, I think, for a lot of Christians to come at this just as a political issue or a cultural issue, maybe an economic issue. And those things are all important. But really our goal with the book is to remind people that immigration is also a biblical issue, that there are immigrants throughout the stories of the scriptures. Many of the heroes of our faith were crossing borders at one point, and God has very specific things to say to his people about how to treat immigrants. And so, you know, really the main point of the book is to say, how do we help biblical principles guide Christians in the United States today as we think about this complex topic, which, you know, is very emotional for a lot of people. People have very strong opinions one way or the other. But we want to take a step back from some of the politics and say, how do we think about this issue as followers of Jesus?
Well, and certainly, Matt, when you reference some of the biblical principles, I'm fascinated by the story of Sodom and Gomorrah in the book of Genesis. And And I think the listeners familiar with that story may assume the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah was reference to homosexuality, and there certainly was a dimension of that. But the Bible specifically states that the sin of Sodom was a lack of hospitality, and hospitality in that time wasn't just putting out sort of nice china and nice napkins for your guests, like sensibility hospitality might be. It really was somebody's survival was at stake if you didn't take care of them, and that's what Sodom was not doing for Abraham and his family when they showed up in the city. And what can we learn from that relative? You know, we've seen so much immigration around our world this past year, people fleeing from the Middle East, from countries in Central and South America as well. There's a lot of just actual physical survival at stake, isn't there?
There is. And I love that example of Sodom and Gomorrah, because I think, you know, in the story of Abraham and Abram before he was Abraham, we see both, you know, his own experience being denied hospitality and at various points, but also his model of hospitality. It's when he sees strangers coming towards him, he runs forward and greets them and helps them out, and they end up being angels there to tell him the good news that he's going to have a child. And we see that reference then in the book of Hebrews. In Hebrews 13, it says, do not forget to practice hospitality, literally in the Greek of the New Testament, philoxenia, to practice loving strangers, because some people by doing so have entertained angels. And probably that's a reference to Abraham. You know, I think we should take that same approach if we're going to be faithful to those biblical commands to practice hospitality. That doesn't mean we dismiss the concerns about security or should be imprudent, but our general orientation as Christians should be, how do we welcome people? How do we meet people's physical needs? You know, I think back to, we tend to see large groups of people and things like, you know, caravans have been in the news, or we hear statistics like 65, 67 million people who've been forcibly displaced from their homes in the world right now by violence and persecution. Really big numbers. A very human response to that is to be overwhelmed and maybe intimidated, even afraid of large numbers of people. But I think back to how Jesus responded when he saw a large crowd, and it says he was moved with compassion because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Mm-hmm. And I think our call as Christians is really to emulate that. And, I mean, Jesus supernaturally provided food for people. We may or may not, you know, be able to do that. We can certainly pray for supernatural assistance. But frankly, in the United States of America, we have natural means to provide food for a lot of people. We have natural means to welcome people and to welcome people into our homes. And most of us, you know, have the space to be able to do that, at least on a small scale. And that's some of the ministry we do at World Relief. We work with local churches around the country and really around the world to welcome people who've been displaced, whether they're coming as refugees or they've been granted asylum in the United States or just other immigrants. And then we do some of that overseas as well, working with church partners in various parts of the world who are usually responding to much larger numbers of displaced people.
Hmm. And certainly in a couple minutes, I want to get into more specifically about how churches can think ahead in 2019 and really begin to help address the issue. But I want to go back to something you said just a moment ago, Matt, and that was the idea of the response Jesus had to the crowds and to people in need. It was a response of compassion. And it seems to me, I don't know what your take would be on this, but in sort of the heated political rhetoric in which there's this emphasis on walls and security, and as you mentioned, for understandable reasons, to have compassion doesn't mean lack of security, right? We're not picking between open borders that are compassionate and closed borders that are bigoted somehow. We're talking about sensible security, but to continue to have a mind towards the compassion for people in need.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And maybe to distinguish between the role of government, which is established by God, and one of its roles is to maintain order and security. I think we see that biblically. But not to be so focused on the role of government that we forget to ask the question of what is the role of the church? And as members of the church, as followers of Jesus, what is our role? And I worry that too often we're so focused on the questions of, is this safe? Is this, you know, is this in our national interest? Which, again, are fair questions, but we only focus on that, and we forget to ask the question that was asked of Jesus, which is, who's my neighbor? And the Bible's pretty clear on who our neighbor is, whom we're called to love. In the story of the Good Samaritan, it was a traveler of a different ethnicity and religion who was in need. And I think the implication for us is that our neighbor could be just about anyone. We don't get to narrowly define who that neighbor God grants us to love is. And so, yes, we can expect our government to maintain security and, you know, make sure that people who would do harm are not coming into the United States. We should expect that and hold them accountable for that. But we also need to make sure that we're doing our part to love and to welcome people, to meet human needs, to point people to the hope of a relationship with Jesus as well.
Talking with Matt Sorens this morning here as we're looking ahead to 2019, but also thinking back on 2018, and one of the biggest headlines that we've seen around our world has been the mass immigration, whether it's happening primarily from the Middle East into countries in the European Union, or certainly we've had a lot of headlines about the wall on the southern border and caravans coming out of places in Central and South America. And Matt, when we come back from break here in just a minute, let's change the conversation to, again, something you referenced here just a moment ago, and that is the ongoing church's role in this. How can the church partner in these situations, maybe with our government, but how also can the church work outside the bounds of government to really take care of people that are in need and our neighbors that may not be from the same country but are still part of our common humanity? So more to come with Matt Sorens next on Faith Radio Mornings. Faith Radio Mornings, as we're having a conversation with Matt Sorens, who's the U.S. Director of Church Mobilization for World Relief, thinking back in 2018 about what's happened with immigration in our world and ahead to 2019. And Matt, at the start of our first segment, we talked about the book that you've co-authored called Welcoming the Stranger and some of the biblical principles we can apply as we think through these ideas of immigration. You first released this book in 2009 in a revised edition coming out this past July 2018. And tell us a little bit about some of the changes you've seen. I'm assuming there's been some pretty big changes in these 9 years since you first published the book.
Yeah, you know, in a sort of paradoxical way, I think I've seen two or maybe three big shifts in the last roughly decade. One is we've seen policy questions become more controversial than ever, you know, and that, maybe that's not a surprise to people. Not that it was easy back in the mid-2000s. It was always a little bit controversial. But frankly, one of the big shifts we've seen is it used to be that the question of illegal immigration was very controversial and how would we respond to people who have not necessarily followed all the U.S. laws. The question of refugees who come with legal status to the United States, invited by the State Department through the U.S. Refugee Resettlement Program. Frankly, that used to be the easy part of what we did at World Relief. Like, it seems like churches just presumed that that would be a good thing to welcome those people. Many of whom are persecuted Christians, and others are persecuted because of their political opinion or for another religious background or whatever. I'd say we've moved past the point where we can presume that most people in most churches think it's an obvious thing that we should, that the church should be welcoming refugees. It's become a very controversial topic. So we do a lot more of addressing some of the misconceptions that I think have become very common in the last few years, specifically around refugees. And then another shift that we've really seen, again, maybe sounds paradoxical, as the policy questions have become more heated, is we've seen the church really lean into this, especially in evangelical churches. There's a lot more discussion happening in churches about how does the Bible address this topic? How should we be responding as Christians? I think a decade or so ago, it was hard to find, particularly in white evangelical churches, I want to be really clear, Hispanic churches have been wrestling with these questions for a lot longer, I think. But in white evangelical churches in particular, it was pretty rare a decade ago to find anyone who was preaching on this topic or doing small group studies or, you know, adult education classes. And we've just seen that become a really important discussion, I think, as it's become a national issue. And a lot more, you know, prominent national evangelical leaders have taken some sort of a position on immigration policy that they think is guided by the Bible in the last decade.
Well, and I'd love for you, Matt, to speak a little bit more specifically, too, about some of the misconceptions you referenced, because I think in a shocking development, the news doesn't always represent what's actually happening at the ground level. I think back to when I was in Israel during the Gulf War, and my then fiance, it was assumed that I was getting bombed each day, and we didn't see anything about any kind of conflict or anything that was going on around us. And so at the ground level, compared to maybe how the news or some of the political rhetoric is representing things, what are you seeing? What are some misperceptions that maybe somebody like me has about the immigration crisis?
Yeah, you know, I think one thing, especially around refugees, people who fled persecution, people, first of all, they have some misconceptions of what's happening in Europe because they've seen news about Europe. And I mean, I've had people at churches ask me, like, is it safe for me to go on a summer vacation to Paris? You know, like, people are under this impression that it's, like, dangerous in Europe at this point. And really, there's been some terrorism in Europe. Frankly, most of it's been perpetrated by European nationals, people born in Europe. So it's not even an immigration issue for the most part. But life in Europe is going on pretty much as normal. And actually, European Christian leaders see this as an incredible opportunity. A friend of mine with Lausanne did a really great paper recently on the the possibility of revival in Europe being fueled by migration, by people coming from Christian backgrounds from Africa, bringing the gospel with them to a continent that where most people are no longer in church, and then people who are from Muslim backgrounds coming from North Africa or from the Middle East and finding Jesus there. So that's one misconception of actually what's happening in Europe. And then an additional layer to that is people have this view of refugees that people are showing up on boats the way they do in Greece. And that's not how refugees come to the United States. Refugees come to the United States through a resettlement program on airplanes with legal permission from the U.S. government. The numbers have been going down in the last couple of years because that's a policy decision. But when someone is identified in the U.S. as a refugee legally, that means they've been vetted really thoroughly by our government. It's a process that usually takes somewhere between 18 months and 3 years to complete. For the very small percentage of the world refugees who get that privilege, it's less than 0.1% of the world's refugees last year who were able to come to the United States. But this idea that we don't know who they are, they could be a terrorist threat, the reality is we've had 3 million refugees since 1980 when the Refugee Act was signed into law who come to the United States, and not a single one of them has taken an American life in a terrorist attack. And that's actually a really remarkable record, and I think a credit to our Department of Homeland Security, which has the job of vetting people overseas before they ever get on that airplane.
Talking with Matt Sorens this morning about Welcoming the Stranger, a book that he's co-authored and re-released here in 2018 that I think can help so many of us cut through the limited kinds of perspectives that the news might offer either side of the political aisle with the rhetoric there, and thinking about this in a Christian way. And Matt, I know you do a lot of work with churches and helping immigrants and refugees and just care for the strangers in need. What do you see as some of the most effective ways that churches have helped in this situation?
Yeah, you know, I think our long-term goal at World Relief is to see mutually transformative relationships. I mean, we think that immigrants have so much to bless the church with. Both, you know, many of them are already believers and are looking to be a part of local churches or to form their own local churches in the language they can, you know, they're most comfortable speaking to God in. And others are not yet believers. And we think that's an opportunity for the church to show the love of Christ with people who, in many cases, are coming from countries where they would be unlikely to ever hear about Jesus, and come into our context where we are blessed with religious freedom, where we can share our faith and people are free to receive it or to reject it. So, you know, we do that by setting up good neighbor teams wherever we have World Relief offices, which is in about 20 locations around the U.S., where folks can basically a team from a local church will welcome a refugee family as they first arrive and walk with them through at least the first 6 months or so that they're in the country. And our hope, you know, we find we can't ask people to make lifetime commitments, but we hope that it actually goes beyond 6 months, that there's just a friendship that develops there. And the needs that family have will diminish over time. They're adjusted, they're economically self-sufficient, they're paying their own rent and all those sort of things. But the friendship can continue, in some cases, right on into eternity. And we've seen that because it's a really powerful thing for a lot of church teams who have said, you know, this was hopefully helpful to this family, but it really changed our church. It really changed our small group. And reoriented our view in some ways of what God is doing. So that's one of the core things we do at World Relief in the U.S. And we do a variety of other ministries that are less ongoing. So we do things like citizenship workshops where a local church will help train volunteers to fill out naturalization applications. So immigrants who have their green cards, our legal team will screen, make sure they qualify to apply for citizenship. And if they do, then volunteers can help fill out those applications. So we do a lot of things like that with Immigrant Legal Services as well.
Well, I think it's an incredible ministry and so important. And you referenced just the stretching and mutual relationships that can happen when we engage with people that might be quite different from us. I remember studying overseas and meeting believers who were also studying from different countries. We didn't even share the same language, and yet there was a common bond that was so often present in those situations. So we love the work you're doing at World Relief. If somebody's a part of a church that's listening this morning, how would they best get in touch with you to maybe think about partnering and ways in which they can help?
Yeah, if folks go to worldrelief.org, worldrelief.org/US, they'll see the locations where we've got offices around the U.S., and unfortunately we're not in every community. But there are other refugee resettlement agencies or ministries serving immigrants in most communities. It's usually as simple as a Google search if World Relief isn't in a particular place. But that's where I would encourage people to start.
Well, Matt, we certainly appreciate your voice of just wisdom and experience on this issue. And again, as we've referenced a couple times this morning, cutting through so much of the rhetoric and the headlines and getting at the ground level about what's actually happening and how we as believers can help in this incredibly important topic of hospitality. So have a great new year ahead, and we look forward to catching up shortly after the new year on some of these topics.
Thanks so much, Peter. It's good to talk to you.
And that wraps up our show for the 28th of December here on Faith Radio Mornings. And look forward to starting again next week as we have a couple of shows in which we'll look back at year-end events in 2018 and look ahead to 2019. So as always, thanks for listening, and we'll chat with you next week.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.